You're about to hear from a civil rights leader, an African-American pastor who feels that gay activists have hijacked the civil rights movement.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I recently wrote an article called Why Gay is Not the New Black. And earlier in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, I raise the question, is gay the new black? And in point of fact, I say categorically that gay activists have hijacked the civil rights movement and that black Americans need to think about their allegiance to President Obama in terms of voting for him based on where he stands on critically important family issues. But I'm a white American. I'm a Jewish follower of Jesus. I was not part of the civil rights movement, although I grew up in a very open, positive family in terms of these issues. What do our African American friends have to say about this? What about African American pastors? What about those who were leaders in the civil rights movement? It's my delight to have one such gentleman with us, Reverend William Owens, the founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, co-founder of Education for All. I'll tell you more about him in a little while, but he was himself a vital part of the civil rights movement in Nashville, Tennessee in the late 50s and early 60s, and has some views that are very challenging to many other African Americans today. So in particular, if you are one of our many precious African American listeners, regardless of whether you have a party affiliation or not, regardless of where you stand in terms of voting for or against Mr. Obama, I would love to hear from you in particular, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, especially if you have a perspective that may differ from that of our guests. I'd love to have some excellent civil dialogue. Without further ado, my guest, Reverend Bill Owens, thank you, sir, for taking time to join us on the broadcast today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be with you today.
And you were actually involved in the civil rights movement back in Nashville, is that correct?
In Nashville, Tennessee, in late 58 through 1961.
Wow, and what exactly was your involvement with that?
I was directly involved. As a matter of fact, believe it or not, John Lewis and I helped lead the civil rights movement in Nashville with John Lewis, Congressman Lewis.
Wow.
Although he has taken a different position than I'm taking now, but we were key leaders in Nashville, Tennessee. You had the universities there. You had Fisk University at Tennessee State, the Baptist College where John Lewis went, and it was a college town. So we were very active in the civil rights movement.
You know, when I teach our students in our ministry school on Jesus Revolution, I show them parts of a video series called The Force More Powerful. And it shows the desegregating of the lunch counters in Nashville and the extraordinary example that was set by the students that were involved with that. So you relate to this on the front lines. We've got a lot to talk about, but in short, the things you did and the civil rights marches and the stands you took, was it so that two men or two women could have the right to get married today?
Not at all. Not at all. When I was in college, I went to Tennessee State University, which was the only state college that a black could go to was Tennessee State University. We wanted to be able to go to the school of our choice. We couldn't sit at the white lunch counters. We had to ride at the back of the bus. There were a lot of things that we were denied. We had to drink out of a certain water fountain that said colored. So there's no comparison in the civil rights movement then and the gays calling it a civil rights movement. It's not a civil rights movement.
All right, Reverend Owens, I want to hear your perspective, sir. I value it so deeply. I have the utmost respect for the stands you have taken and the stand you're taking today. We're going to talk this through, friends. We'll welcome the controversy. We'll model a civil discussion right here today on The Line of Fire.
fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to make clear today that this show is not about Democrats versus Republicans. It is not about President Obama versus the presumptive Republican nominee, Mitt Romney. It is about issues of truth, issues of righteousness. It is about ethics. It is about Christian values. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My guest, Reverend William Owens, founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, co-founder of Education for All. As we just heard a moment ago, he was involved in the front lines of the civil rights movement in Nashville, Tennessee, the late 1950s and early 1960s. And one of his greatest achievements is recruiting 400 black students for Oral Roberts University in 4 years. He also serves as religious liaison for the National Organization for Marriage. Reverend Owens, there are so many things I'd like to talk to you about, questions I'd like to ask you. But let's put this on the table first. Are you advocating a particular political party? Does the Coalition of African American Pastors identify primarily with one party or the other?
Absolutely not. We do not align with parties. We align with principles. We are principle-based, not party-based. We have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have independents, but it is absolutely not a party-line issue with us.
And even though we understand that in the African-American community, traditional values are stronger than, generally speaking, in the white American community. The belief in the importance of marriage and even church attendance and honoring scripture would be higher in the African-American community than in the white American community. Yet at the same time, many white evangelicals don't understand why so many black Christians vote Democratic. Are there other issues that perhaps white Christians are missing here, or do you think that perhaps black Christians are missing some fundamental issues?
Well, I don't think the answer to that is very simple, but I'll do my best. I think one thing that happened some years ago, I think the Republican Party as a whole somewhat didn't value the blacks to address their concerns. I was reading the other day that the Democrats actually go all out to court the African-American community, and the Republicans kind of say, well, if you want to come, just come. Mm-hmm. And I've been dealing with that issue for several years. I went into my archives and found some correspondence from a good friend of mine that we talked about that, where the many Republicans will give African Americans lip service, but not deep involvement. And you're not going to win people at a distance. Mm-hmm. It's like evangelizing. If you really want the African American to be with you, you must show it. You must show it. And the Democrats go all out to recruit the African American community. And the Republicans kind of say, well, if you want to come, come. And you go to a function where the Republican president is speaking or something, and you have to look for black folks. I was at a function in Nashville, Tennessee. I was invited there when President Bush was the president. And there were so few blacks there, except the military. I went out ahead of dismissal so I could get a count. And I counted the first 400 people. There were about 2,000 people there. I actually counted the first 400. And out of those 400 people, I counted 17 blacks. Now, I think that was bad because whatever the Republicans needed to do to get black in attendance to hear from the president, the Republicans, it was their responsibility to do it. But that's just not the way they operate.
All right, so there has been a strong miss then on the part of the Republican Party to reach out, to cultivate, to listen to interact with black Americans. And if we were going to be proportionately correct, there should have been, say, 50 or 60 black Americans there out of the first 400 as opposed to 17, just numerically. That being said, how is it, though, in your view? Because, again, we can criticize all sides, all parties, and we can commend all sides or parties because neither of us are taking a political stand here but a righteousness stand. How is it, then, that so many African Americans can have a strong conservative family value in a very fundamental way, and yet some are still saying, well, we're going to stand with the president, we're going to vote for him because we have to stand together on this, as opposed to saying, look at his view on abortion, look at his view on same-sex marriage? How does that break down on the other side?
Well, sometimes I'm puzzled. They can't see the forest for the trees. There are many issues to look at. But because he is black, many black people will give him a pass. If he does it, it's okay. I'll make an excuse for it. And I think that's tragic, but that's the way it is. But now I tell you, since he came out for same-sex marriage, I don't know what the secular polls are saying, but I can tell you that the people that have talked to us, and we never asked, will you vote for President Obama? Will you? That is not our approach. Our approach is, Mr. Obama, would you listen to us, give us an audience, and would you rescind your position? But many of them are saying, a large percentage of them are saying, we will not vote for President Obama anymore because of that issue. Because same-sex marriage not only affects what happens today or this election or the next 4 years, it will affect this country forever, our children, our grandchildren, and on down the line. And for a sitting president to endorse same-sex marriage, I don't think it's good. And many black people are taking a position that they're not going to vote for him anymore. I know there are a lot of people are. We've gotten a lot of people who say they will vote for him. But there are more saying that they won't vote for him than I had imagined would say it.
Now, you have a website, 100,000 Signatures for Marriage. So 100,000, all the digits, signatures, the number four, marriage. 100,000 Signatures for Marriage.com. I'm looking right now at the letter that you wrote, Reverend William Bill Owens Sr., writing on behalf of marriage. What's the importance of this website? What are you trying to do through it? Who should go there?
We're trying to get, we even have a section. We wanted 100,000 signatures, and we have, if you're not black, we wanted the president to know that there are many thousands of blacks who want you to change your position. But we also have a section there for friends. If you're not black, you still sign up.
Got it.
And the purpose is to take these names at one point to the president and say, Mr. President, we have 100,000 people here who want you to change your position. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to stand firmly by endorsing same-sex marriage? Are you going to hear what the people, the majority of the people who put you in, they said, what they wanted? So we are going to challenge him on that and give him a chance to rescind his position. He can do that. The gay community went to him and said, endorse us. So as a church, as the black leaders in the community, we're doing the same thing. We're saying, here we are. We supported you almost 100%. Now we want you to hear our voice. Hear what we are saying, that we do not agree. We don't like you endorsing same-sex marriage. It's going to ruin our society. And we expect more from the President of the United States of America.
Wonderful. Again, the website, 100,000signaturesformarriage.com. Write out the digits 100000 and then signatures, then the number 4marriage.com. We've got links up as well to the Coalition of African American Pastors website. Reverend Owens, we've got a bunch of callers that want to talk to you. I want to get to them right after the break. But perhaps you could just take a minute. From my vantage point, as I stand for righteousness in society, as I stand for the unborn, as I stand for marriage, I'm fighting a parallel battle to what Dr. King and many of you fought in the last generation for righteousness. Do you see this as a parallel? You were on the front lines of the civil rights movement, late 50s, early 60s. Do you feel like you're fighting the same kind of battle for truth and righteousness today?
Fighting it just as hard. So the homosexuals won't step in and claim that what we did is the same as what they're doing now. So we are fighting, pushing back, because they are pushing forward with all they have. So we are pushing, trying to push that tide back, because it will help to destroy our society. Look at what has happened to other societies when they went down this road. The same thing will happen to our society.
Yeah, loud and clear, sir. All right, my guest, Reverend William Owens, the website we need you to go to sign 100,000 signatures for marriage.com. When we come back, I want to get to all the other callers. We've got one line open if you want to join in, 866-34-TRUTH. Much more to come.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, these are urgent issues of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. My guest, Reverend William Owens, founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, co-founder of Education for All. Reverend Owens, again, I appreciate you taking time to be with us on the air today.
I'm honored to be with you.
Well, thank you, sir. Let's grab a few calls, and thanks for being willing to extend your visit into the next half hour. So we got plenty of time to talk through issues, really understand what the stakes are, and take some calls as well. Dominic in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Dominic, can't hear you. Not sure what the phone problem is, but Andrew will check that out with you. Marie in Washington, D.C., thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Just need you to speak up, Marie.
Hi. I'm trying to ask a question without being all over the place. I'd like to thank the guest for being on here and expressing his view. I am also of African-American descent. One parent, Afro-Mexican, the other parent of Nigerian background, but I've also was married to a Shiite Muslim, so my views are, and I've traveled all over the world, so, and I have my bachelor's, and so I am solidly on the fence about this situation. Through my studies and through what I've seen traveling around the world, it seems from my research and from what I learned, a lot of our greatest philosophers, greatest religious leaders, greatest thinkers, artists, warriors were gay and lesbian back from the time of Alexander the Great on to today. A lot of our the Jewish great writer, which I'll never give the name, but the great Jewish writer for religious books, I believe he was gay. The great leaders of the African civil rights movement, a few were gay. So
you're talking, say, in the civil rights movement, say, Bayard Rustin. Who are you talking about in terms of a Jewish writer of religious books?
Yeah, I don't want to give name, but he was a great intellectual. Great.
But you don't know his name?
Oh, yes, I do. I just don't want to give.
Well, all right, because it's important to have accurate information to start, and then Reverend Owens can respond to that, but let's just leave it there, because a lot of people that are claimed to be gay or lesbian today, that's not accurate. It's mythological. Read back into that. But Reverend Owens, what's your response to that? That perhaps there were great artists or intellectuals or even warriors who identified as gay or lesbian. So what's wrong with that? Why shouldn't we be embracing that today?
Well, first of all, it doesn't matter who you are. Your position, your power, your money, it does not make God's law wrong. God's law is God's law for anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. We cannot be so important or so great with God's gift that we think we can turn it upside down and the way God ordained it. So a lot of great people have been gay, and all of us have some gay friends, but we don't want to turn our society upside down by them marrying each other. God loves everybody, and God gives all of us gifts, but that doesn't make it right. If I were gay, anybody, it does not make it right. No more than adultery is right, no more than fornication is right, no more than robbing is right, stealing. Wrong is wrong. So because another person does something and they're great, doesn't make it right. I endorse the mayor, which I very seldom endorse anybody, any politician, but the mayor of our city. And in my endorsement, it was very unusual. I said, Mr. Mayor, we're going to hold you accountable because too many of our black political leaders end up doing wrong, stealing money, taking money out of the table, fraud, when we have an obligation to our young people to be an example. So it doesn't make it right because a great person did it. It's still wrong.
Yeah, thank you for the clear answer, Reverend Owens. Marie, something also I encourage you to think about. There have been famous leaders, civil rights leaders, presidents, others in history, philosophers who were adulterers. We do not therefore sanction adultery because of that. There have been others who had some very bizarre sexual desires or things that we would all agree on, or perverse desires or behaviors. We would say that they were influential thinkers or philosophers despite that. So we're not saying that someone who identifies as gay or lesbian is subhuman or is incapable of doing good in society. We're simply saying we're not going to redefine marriage based on that, nor are we going to say this is innate and immutable, because many of the people that you can refer to were bisexual. Some had attractions change over the years, and many of us have friends who have come out of homosexuality. So it must be evaluated on its own. And Marie, I would strongly encourage you as a thinking woman, and I appreciate an excellent thinking question, I would strongly encourage you to get a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's readily available online. Bookstores won't carry it for the most part. It's too hot to handle. A Queer Thing Happened to America. And study carefully the chapter that says, Is Gay the New Black? Where I say, okay, even if you want to argue that sexual orientation is innate and immutable, which I don't accept, that still makes no statement about moral behavior or the morality of the acts themselves. So get the book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and then write me a note once you do, or call back. I'd love to discuss it further with you. Thank you very much for the call. All right, Reverend Owens, we've got to take care of a couple of matters now, and then we'll get you right back on a couple minutes from now to continue to discuss things. And please just give one more plug for your website so that we can get people there.
Yes, 100,000. You give it for me.
All right. Yeah.
I'm so involved in this conversation.
No, I lose track of my website sometimes too. It is 100,000 signatures for marriage, the number four. And write out the numbers, 100,000signaturesformarriage.com. All right, friends, if you value what we are doing on radio and you recognize the importance of this broadcast, now is an opportune moment to stand with us, because we have a donor multiplying your gifts, still continuing even into June as we reach certain goals. But we've put together the best resource offer we ever have in our ministry history on the radio. It is two CDs for your computer or your MP3 player. It's only $40, 12 hours of teaching on prayer, 12 hours of teaching on intercession. I mean, life-changing, inspiring, informative, biblically based. It's only $40 plus postage. This week only, $15 postage paid. And any additional gifts you add into that will be multiplied by your donor. So take advantage of this. At the very least, get this phenomenal resource that will help charge and invigorate your own prayer life. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our website, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the online bookstore to order. Again, 1-800-278-9978. If you're leaving us now on radio, keep listening online as we continue with Reverend William Owens of the Coalition of African American Pastors.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My special guest today, Reverend William Owens, founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, and what means so much to me, having studied some of this history, a man who, before I was born, was helping lead the civil rights movement in Nashville, actively involved 1958 into the early 1960s. Reverend Owen, could you take a moment and just speak your heart to our Black listeners, in particular those who identify as Christian, about the importance of these moral issues and why you founded the Coalition of African American Pastors?
Well, what we needed, I felt the African-American community needed a voice that crossed denominational lines. So our pastors are from every denomination you can imagine. And this voice will always stand up for what's right. Most Black pastors line up with us. Some agree, some do not agree. But we wanted a solid voice where we could come together regardless of your religious background, your church, your denomination, that we could come together in one voice and address issues that concern the African-American community, such as marriage, abortion, education. Those are our three main principles. Those are three main things that we really work on. Our children need a good education. I've been in education for 50 years. Our children need a good education. The abortion rate is terrible. By the way, my wife and I adopted a little baby that was born Christmas Day. The joy of our life. What if that mother had aborted? Beautiful baby, good baby, and he is the joy of our life. You do know he's spoiled. We love that little baby so much. She could have aborted that little baby. How many Martin Luther Kings? How many Einsteins? How many doctors and teachers and lawyers have we killed in the African-American community? So we stand up for life, and the marriage is so important in the African-American community. We want to bring family values to our community in a solid way, and we stand on that. And so we organize this organization around principles on biblical principles. It's not organized around politics, but around biblical principles. Does that answer your question?
Oh, loud and clear, and with articulation and passion. I was smiling as you talked about the adopted baby, too. We've got a bunch of callers. I want to get to them momentarily, but do you believe that there really was a planned attack on the Black community of America through Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood? Is there any type of desire for Black genocide, either among the early founders of Planned Parenthood or some leaders today, or is that just a complete conspiracy theory that's crazy to you?
That's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. It looked like anything and everything that can come against Black people, it comes. Sometimes it comes disguised. But look at the number of Black babies that are aborted every year.
Yeah.
And the Black community is absolutely a conservative community. Now, with the president endorsing same-sex marriage, I think it's the Black eye to the Black community we voted for him almost 100%. I think it's a betrayal. So we just want to get it right. We want morals. We want morals for our children. We march for it. We marched that children could get a good education. Now, many of them who have the opportunity don't want the education. I was talking to one of my fellow marchers a few months ago, and we sat down and we looked at some of the condition of our young people. We're overflowing the jails, and we asked between us in a joking way, why did we march? Why did we put our life on the line?
That's a question. Reverend Owens, I've got to jump in. That's a question I've asked myself. Other leaders have talked about what's happened. I want to get back to that before we're done here, but we'll get to callers as soon as we come back. CJ, New York, you're next, sir.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've got a bunch of questions for my guest, Reverend William Owens, the founder and president of Coalition of African American Pastors. I encourage all of you, in particular African-American listeners, to go to the website 100,000 Signatures for Marriage. That's all numbers, 100,000 signatures, the number 4, marriage.com, and sign the petition there, which will be presented to President Obama. But before I ask further questions of my guest, let me go to the phone. Some of you have been patiently holding. CJ in New York City, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Oh, hi, Dr. Brown. Hi, Reverend.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. Before I get my questions, just some very quick comments. The book Freakonomics and the ABC special said that one of the reasons that the crime rate went down was the groups that were getting the most abortions, like blacks and Puerto Ricans during the Giuliani administration, made the crime rate go down. My second one would be, for instance, like during 1992, I remember when Bill Clinton was running for president, he wanted Jesse Jackson's endorsement. And what happened was Jesse Jackson was late, and I remember that Bill Clinton was angry. And Bill Clinton said, I want your endorsement. And Jesse Jackson went up to Bill Clinton, and he said, we no longer want to be called black, we want to be called African-Americans. I'd like to know, why would you use the term African-Americans when not every black person is African-American? Because, I mean, it cancels out black people from Europe and other countries.
I'm finding it hard to hear you. Just a moment.
Yeah, just to repeat his question, he's wondering why the term African-American is used so broadly when there are Americans who are black who have different descent than Africa, or at least directly from Africa, why that term is so widely used today.
I think it's just a generic term. I use both of them, black, African-American. I can't answer why it's so widely used because I would use them according to the circumstances. I don't think there's a reason. And I don't think one person could determine what we want to be called. I think it's a group thing, and I think you'll find that most blacks, they don't care whether you call them blacks or African-Americans. I'm just a good American Christian.
That's
where I'd like to be known, as a good American Christian.
Personally. All right. Great. Thank you for the question and comment, CJ. Thank you for the response. Annette in Warrenton, Virginia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, okay. I'm an African-American female, and I was just calling. You kind of touched on it a little while ago about abortion, and I was kind of concerned that it saddens me and it disappoints me that there's a contradiction between many African-Americans who seem to be concerned for the homosexual agenda, but there's no or a lack of concern about President Obama's clear stance on abortion. And I guess my question is, where were or are these voices in the African-American leadership to hold on to those things such as abortion, education, and so on?
My voice is as strong against abortion as it is against same-sex marriage. As I told you, we just adopted a baby that was born Christmas Day, and I already have 6 children. And can you imagine a baby, and we just love that baby? See, I think the message that we need to get out is, first of all, my wife and I wanted to adopt, and my wife is much younger than I am, and we were told by all the agencies that she was too old. So you know I was too old. I've been in education 51 years. And she was told when she was in her early 40s that she was too old. It just so happened that a mother sought us out and asked her, would you take our baby? If I birth him, would you take him? We said gladly. And one day we got a call. We were in Dallas, Texas. My wife was a university professor. And we got a call that the baby's here. Do you still want the baby? And we dropped everything. and came to get that baby, and we, the baby was born Christmas Day. We picked the baby up Thursday, and we just loved that baby. So I'm as strong for not having an abortion, but I think the community is going to have to wake up and understand something, because some people, my dear friends, asked me, why would you adopt a baby at your age? Well, most people don't understand, Doctor, you probably know this, that a baby is set by age four. Mm-hmm. That baby, when you see a 15 or 16-year-old boy murdering people, fighting, it didn't happen when he got 10 years old. His formation was the first 4 years of his life. So I told them, my answer was, you know what? If God blessed me to live four more years, I will help form a baby, a child full of love. The first 4 years of that child's life are the most important years, and a lot of people don't know that. And I don't think you have to be 20 years old to adopt.
Now, Reverend Owen, let me pursue one more thing. It still is amazing to me to think of this adoption story, to think of you holding a newborn, you and your wife in your arms. It's just amazing, and a great testimony and message through that. But following through on Annette's question and comments you made earlier about everything coming against the black community, I look at Scripture. I see how Satan tried to destroy Moses before he was born, how Satan tried to kill Jesus when he was a baby. So on the one hand, I see a general attack on the younger generation through abortion and destruction of marriage. But in particular, I see an attack on the black American community, which makes me think God has great purposes for the black American community, hence the tremendous attack. Since the attack on abortion is so massive, do you think that black leaders have been putting their head in the sand or just going through a politically correct shift like Reverend Jesse Jackson? Why is it that there are so few black voices addressing this when it's such a horrific attack on your community, on this next generation?
Well, I could be honest with you. I wonder the same thing.
Yeah.
I wonder the same thing. Things have changed so since the civil rights movement. And I said this in one of my op-eds, and I'm not talking about any certain person, but some leaders run from city to city where there's a flare-up and try to jump in front of the parade for the publicity, and then they go to the next one. So there is an attack on the black community, and I believe there's a reason, because I believe out of the black community can come some of the greatest things the world has ever known. We have done great things. If you look at our history, look at the now, just look at our history, and we can do it again. But I believe the powers that be, the enemy, whatever you want to call them, is making an all-out effort to destroy the African-American community. And unless the leaders stand up for what's right, instead of prestige or power or money, until we stand up, it's going to go down that road.
Yeah, absolutely. Annette, thank you for the call. As Dr. King said, the church must be the conscience of this of the state, and that conscience will come in particular from leaders. Lee in Boston. All right, we lost Lee. I think we've reconnected with Dominic in Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Hopefully we've got a good connection this time. Go ahead, sir.
We got a great connection. You sound much
all right.
better.
Go for it.
Hey, Reverend Owens, I actually have a couple things for you. You know, Obama was against abortion and all that other stuff before he went into office, okay? Now, all of a sudden, he is with it because of a new election. He's for it because, I believe, because of the vote. But that's not really the reason why I called. When Jesus was up on the mountain, Satan offered him everything, if he would just bow down to him. Okay, that's Jesus. Obama is not Jesus. Obama is weak. He's a weak Christian, an uneducated Christian, that let Satan get to him and do this to him. And that's only because of politics. That's only because of riches. He's only a man.
Hey, yeah, just to jump in, Dominic, because we're short on time. Do you have a question for Reverend Owens, just to be fair to other callers as well, sir?
Yes. The question I have is, you on your program yesterday, you guys talked about Kirk Cameron. The stuff that came out of Kirk Cameron's mouth yesterday, what does Reverend Owens think about the response that Kirk Cameron received?
So you're saying when Kirk Cameron stood up for basic biblical family values and came under tremendous attack and from the media, from Hollywood, etc. Reverend Owens, are you coming under attack? We just got 30 seconds before the next break, but are you coming under attack from others for the stance that you take for morality?
Of course I am. I'm used to it, though. It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, that goes with the territory. Goes with the territory. From a child, I'm a member of the Church of God in Christ, which is one of the largest denominations in the world now. But when I was a boy and grew up, they considered us a cult. They laughed at us. We were the joke. Because they call us the sanctified people. So I'm immune to the criticism and what other people think because I've been going through it all my life. Now it's just my bag.
Loud and clear.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Boy, I wish I had several hours with my guest, Reverend William Owens, founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, co-founder of Education for All. Please go to the website to sign. It is 100,000 signatures, the number 100,000 signatures, number 4, 100,000signaturesformarriage.com. Reverend Owens, a few key questions I want to ask you before our time is up. Have there been Black Americans who have said to you, because of the moral stance you take, that you are not Black enough, or has anyone even called you a racist because of the stances you take?
I got a letter the other day called me a racist.
Amazing.
As a matter of fact, the letter said I probably would approve slavery too. Yes, I get that. But as I say, it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't bother me.
Got it.
Yes, practically anything negative a person can get, I get.
Yeah, I would think you get it from all angles. I get a few negative things as well, as you can understand. But when I know it's for the truth, sir, when I know it's for righteousness, it actually invigorates me.
Then I know I'm doing something right.
Yeah, if it was for foolishness on my end or lack of sensitivity or a moral failure or lack of Christ-like behavior, I would be grieving and mourning and agonizing over it. If it's for the truth and righteousness, I'll shout for joy.
That's right.
There is a news report that Attorney General Eric Holder, IRS, and lawyers from the ACLU will brief several hundred pastors in the African-American community on how to participate in the presidential election, which the Congressional Black Caucus chair expects will help President Obama's campaign. This seems to be an unprecedented act. Are you aware of this? And if so, how do you feel about that?
Well, that's the reason we're writing the letter. We're asking to meet with the president and Mr. Holder to share our views on the position that Mr. Obama's taking. It's really an answer to what they're doing. I don't know when that meeting is going to be held, but I learned about it yesterday. So that is going to be our answer. We appreciate them protecting the rights of the people to do what they want to do to help President Obama. We want the right to have our voice heard in opposition to the position that President Obama is taking.
Excellent. Wonderful. Whatever we can do to support that, stand with you on that, we will do it. And one other question, it came up earlier, but it's one that I wondered about. When my wife Nancy and I were watching the Force More Powerful video, and it had a long, about a 40-minute segment on the desegregation of the Nashville lunch counters and the admirable behavior of those that were involved. And John Lewis, whom you mentioned earlier, was one of those people. And some of those that were involved in that are now on the other side of these issues about redefining marriage. But we noticed the extreme dignity with which the young people carried themselves, how they were in suits and ties, how education was important to them, how there was a real sense of honor in what they were standing for. And then I've watched, as there have been certain freedoms and rights granted and some of the horrors of desegregation are for the most part a memory of the past, with greater freedom and liberty, there seems to have been a degeneration of certain moral or family values. One of my Black pastor friends was saying that in his day, you could quote Dr. King and it would have meaning. He said if he went up to a bunch of teenagers on the street corner hanging out, getting high, and said, hey, Dr. King said thus and such, that it would have no meaning to them. Do you have insights as to what's happened? Because you have fought for certain things, you have seen those realized, and yet there seems to be a decline in other areas at the same time.
I think I have some insight because I have some experience. That bothered me so bad when I saw the direction our young people were going in. Go to any criminal court, USA, and the majority of people in that courtroom, they're black. So when you hear the stir of me putting 400 students at Oral Roberts University, it was born out of that. I wanted to know, do black people want an education? And I traveled this country, 40-some states, recruiting students, and I worked out a relationship with the university where if I signed on, they would accept that student regardless of their test scores, regardless of anything. But we were responsible, and we got students who wanted to go to college, didn't know they could go to college, and we put 400 students there with a 75% graduation rate. So wow. I'm going to tell you some of it is solidly lays at the foot of our leadership. If we lead these young people right, many of them will do right. We must lead. And I work through the churches across America. As a matter of fact, the Coalition of African American Pastors is an outgrowth of that ministry at Oral Roberts University. We develop relationship with pastors in 50 states and other countries. And from that, we built the Coalition of African American Pastors, and Education for All took the place of what was called then Give Me a Chance Ministry. We wanted to give students a chance if they wanted a chance. And they did want a chance. They were thirsty for an education.
Well, Reverend Owens, thank you for making a difference. Thank you for setting an example. The website for the Coalition of African American Pastors, CAAP.org, the website to sign, very important petition, one of the most important statements you can make right now, 100,000 signatures for marriage.com. That's the number four. And Reverend Owens, we want to sow some of our books, A Queer Thing Happened to America, into the hands of key leaders. And it is an honor to associate with you, to work with you, and to thank you for the work that you and your fellow leaders have been doing. Together, I believe America can be changed for the glory of the Lord. So thank you, sir, for being with us today.
Thank you. And don't forget, I'm the religious liaison for the National Organization for Marriage. I honor that position.
Oh, yeah. When I saw that in the bio as well, I was thrilled to see it with the key frontline role for the National Organization for Marriage. And for you to be the religious liaison there, what a key position. Stay right there, sir. We just want to be able to stay in touch. Hey, friends. This is a spontaneous thing that just happened, but we're going to send retail value with postage a couple thousand dollars worth of books, A Queer Thing Happened to America, to give to Reverend Owens and the key signatures of that petition that will go to the president, 60 key leaders in the nation. We want to send those books out. Would you help us do that? Would you join forces with us today with a generous contribution that will help us send those books out and get them into the hands of key leaders in the Coalition of African American Pastors? What a worthy investment. Many of you helped us get them to key Southern Baptist leaders all over America. Now you can help us get them into the hands of key African American pastors all over America. Call to sponsor a book or more, 1-800-278-9978. Oh, every $50 sponsors two books plus postage, I would say that's a fair number. 1-800-278-9978. Tell you what, we'll throw that right back into radio so it'll be multiplied by a donor as well. How's that? So call the stand with us and participate. Just say you want to make a donation to help, and we'll know where to put it. 1-800-278-9978. That's one more time. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there is an exceptional calling on the Black American church. There is an exceptional calling on young African Americans and old African Americans to stand up and be the leaders for righteousness in this generation. We're looking to you. We're standing with you. It is your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, giving you some guidelines for the Jesus revolution in society today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What a joy to be with you today, and what a privilege to speak for the last hour to Reverend William Owens. He was a leader in the civil rights movement, late 50s, early 60s, has been involved in education for over 50 years, and now leads the Coalition of African American Pastors. You can catch that entire broadcast online later today by going to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. But boy, let me tell you, we've got some revolutionary things to talk with you about today. I believe your hearts will be stirred. I believe you'll be encouraged. I believe you'll be enlightened. You will be equipped. We are here to help you be a world changer. We are here to stand with you as you stand for the Lord and stand for righteousness and stand for truth and stand to exalt the name of Jesus. We are here to help stir the fire in your heart so that you yourself will become a burning torch. Oh, yeah. That's why we are here. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. First hour yesterday, I read some quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King. I want to repeat them now. And then I want to tell you about some fresh encouragement I received in my heart about the upcoming elections. You'll be surprised with what I have to say. But first, Dr. King, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic, meaning politically wise? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because it is right. Now, let me tell you about some encouragement that I have in my heart about the upcoming elections. I am militantly opposed to major policies of our president. I felt that he would govern in a certain direction before he was elected. He has done that very thing, and in certain ways, even more extremely than I thought, because I was trying to hope against hope that he would go in a different direction. And I was even excited, okay, he's elected. This is a big moment in American history. May he stand for righteousness. And of course, he has not. In so many critical areas. At the same time, I absolutely do not have hope that Mitt Romney, who has sufficient delegates to be the nominee and then come the Republican convention, is officially named as such. But I do not have tremendous hope or faith or confidence that he will be the man to turn America in the direction of righteousness, not because of his Mormon faith, but just because of some of his values. Now, I hope I'm wrong about that. If he's elected, I hope I'm wrong about that. If Mr. Obama's reelected, I hope I'm wrong about that in terms of my expectations. But here's the encouragement I received, that it's going to be harder for us to fall into the trap of putting our trust in the White House in the next election. I believe it's a very important election, but we're going to have to realize, as important as the vote is, that that's down the list in terms of most important things we can be doing as followers of Jesus. And we're going to have to wake up to righteousness, and we're going to have to wake up to our role as salt and light, and we're going to have to wake up to the fact that the great changes that we know must come to our nation will not primarily come from the White House, barring divine intervention of an unprecedented kind in our generation. They will come from God's people humbling ourselves, seeking God, repenting of our own sins, turning to Him, and then living out our faith and being determined to not do what is politically expedient or politically correct or popular, but to do what is right at any cost, at any consequence. Are you with me? Does that resonate in your heart? Back with more.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, can I invite you to be involved in a brand new project that was just birthed moments ago? My guest in the last hour, as I mentioned, Reverend William Owens, is the founder and president of the Coalition for African American Pastors. They are trying to get 100,000 signatures from Black Americans to present to the president and to ask him to evolve back on his views about same-sex so-called marriage and challenge him respectfully to do what is right in terms of marriage and family. And I felt it would be good for these gentlemen, these men and women that will be signing the letters, 60 key leaders that will be presenting this to the president, to have copies of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, with postage. Each book is somewhere over $30 retail value. So we're going to be sending out 60 of these. We've already committed to do it. But if you'd like to sponsor one, our phone team doesn't even know that we did this. So when you call in, just tell them, I'd like to make a donation. That's all you have to tell them. I'd like to make a donation. And when you make that donation today, we'll put that towards getting those books out. And what we're also going to do is we're going to sew the books in, and your help, we're still going to get a donor to back that and turn it into more funds for radio ministry. So it's kind of not killing two birds with one stone. It's like giving life to three or four or five different birds with one stone. So if you want to participate in that special project, get copies of A Queer Thing Happened to America into the hands of key African-American pastors who are on the front line of standing for righteousness for family. That means for the definition of marriage, that means standing for life, standing against abortion, standing for education. Then stand with us. Your gift of any size will be used towards that. And just call and make your donation, 1-800-278-9978. You don't have to say what it's for, because whatever comes in today, we're going to put right towards that, 1-800-278-9978. All right. I feel it is so important now, friends, that we seize the moment, that we seize the moment here in America, that we go beyond party lines, that we go beyond party affiliation, that we go beyond race issues, that we go beyond the things that would traditionally divide us, even in the church, and that we determine to stand for righteousness, that we determine to do what's right regardless of cost or consequence, that we draw a line in the sand and say that we're going to have to give account to God one day for the stands that we take. We are going to have to give account to God one day for how we raised our families, for what we did with our time, for whether we acted with courage or whether we bowed down to the spirit of the age. We are in so much turmoil here in America. I expect it to only increase over the next 5 months. There is worldwide turmoil. I expect that to increase. God's word says that ultimately, I don't mean right now, but ultimately, everything that can be shaken will be shaken. God's kingdom cannot be shaken. And the psalmist says that the righteous will never be shaken. Now's the time for us to plant our spiritual roots deep. Now's the time for us to get beyond the convenience Christianity and a connoisseur gospel message. Now's the time to say, Lord, if you're looking for someone to stand for what's right, here I am. If you're looking for someone to make a difference in my community, here I am. If you're looking for someone to speak the truth from the pulpit or at a home Bible study or in the place of business or media or family or education, wherever you placed us, Lord, here I am. And if you'll go to him, he'll put things in your heart. We're always happy to give you suggestions and ideas and point you in certain directions of effective service. But if you'll go to the Lord, he'll put things in your heart. He'll show you what you can do within your own sphere of influence and within the calling of who you are. Some are called to be on radio. Some are called to be working in the ghetto. Some are called to be working in the mission field. Some are called to be working in the White House. We each have callings. We each have unique things God has fashioned us for. But the key thing as a Jesus revolutionary is to say, Lord, here I am. Send me, use me, and then do what you know how to do. whether it's seek God earnestly in prayer, whether it's fast, whether it's stand up for righteousness in your school system, whether it's getting involved in the life of someone struggling, whether it's going after the lost, whether it's giving generously to help the poor, whatever it is, we all have something we can do. Even if you're bedridden and can't get out of your house and your biggest issue right now is healing, even there, your intercession is precious at the throne of God and can make a major difference. In a moment, I want to talk to you about the mentality of a revolutionary, how we think as disciples and followers of Jesus. But first, following up from last hour, I do want to take one call. And if you'd like to join in any part of this discussion whatsoever, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Jane in Alexandria, Virginia, thanks for holding so long. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Jane.
Yes, hi. How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you. How about you?
Oh, I'm very blessed. Thank you. What I'm calling, I want to make a comment, if you don't mind.
Please.
First of all, give honor to God. I didn't vote for Obama in the beginning. First of all, I always pray for God to lead me, to let me know who I should vote for. And if you will remember that there were two questions that were asked of him. How did he feel about abortion and homosexuality, which he skirted on both of them. And I was really surprised by the black people that they did not pick up on that. So he basically said that he did not, that he stood for homosexuality at the time. I mean, that he did stand for it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel that at that time he stated what he stood for at that time. Now, if you go to the book of 2 Corinthians 6:9, God, you know, plainly says that, you know, don't be deceived that homosexuality will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And it's so plain. You know, of course, God does not hate the person, but he hates the sin.
So Jane, do you feel then that there has been, on a certain level, a betrayal by the president to his voters? I warned people in advance that he had these radical views and that he would be governing this way, and we should pray against that. But since he did give a certain answer in certain circles, do you feel that there was a betrayal of his voters?
Absolutely. I think he, you know, first of all, I don't understand why, and I am Black American, okay? And I just don't know why Black people did not pick up on, you know, first of all, I think if we as the Black people, those that are Christians, should have picked up on that in the beginning.
Yes.
You know, I think God should be first.
Yeah, and Jane, just to jump in here, I think that all of us, with our different backgrounds, culture, ethnicity, race, that we all have hidden strongholds in our thinking, hidden blind spots that we're not aware of. And it's so important for every one of us to go before the Lord and say, Lord, I'm your child first and foremost. I mean, here I'm a white male Jewish follower of Jesus. The ultimate thing that defines my life is first and foremost follower of Jesus. What I have to do is go to the Lord and say, Lord, if there are areas of thinking, ways of thinking, strongholds in my mind, in my heart, my attitude that have to do with my upbringing or have to do with being American or have to do with culture, reveal that so I can be a true disciple. And that's what it's going to take to be true disciples.
I don't believe that he is Christian, you know, first of all, because some things are just plain. And that was not a hard question for him to answer. See, it doesn't matter whether the people believe that it's okay to be gay or whatever. That question was whether what he believed.
Right.
And I said he had been honest about what he believed, but he was not honest. And I think a lot of people voted for him simply because he was black instead of looking at him as a person and not the color of his skin. And that's what I admired Martin Luther King for, because he said the content of the character of the person.
Exactly.
Not the color of the skin.
Right. That's what matters. And you know, Jane, I'm perfectly happy as a white American to challenge fellow white Americans, evangelicals, who kind of put their trust in the Republican Party as if getting a Republican in the White House is going to change America. And what's going to change America is the church repenting and going after God. But we've got to ask hard questions, and we've got to be willing to stand up for what's right. Look, you heard Reverend Owens in the last hour say that he here he is, an early leader in the civil rights movement in Nashville, Tennessee, late 50s, early 60s. And here he's told, because he stands for marriage and stands against abortion and so on, that he's a racist. And he's told he would probably have supported slavery back in that day. Friends, these are strongholds that must be broken. Any of us can have them, regardless of our background, race, ethnicity. That's where we go to God and say, Lord, I want to be a loyal follower of Jesus. Jane, thanks for the call. We come back. I want to talk to you about a revolutionary mentality. What should our devotion to the Lord be? What should this look like as we live this out today?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Would you help me process something here for a moment? Then I want to talk to you about the revolutionary mentality, how it applies to us as followers of Jesus. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Help me process this, will you? All right. It's Wednesday. We're focused on the world, moral, cultural issues. I am right now in dialogue with a man who had sex change surgery and now identifies as a woman. This person reached out to me and said I seemed compassionate. They respected me as a committed follower of Jesus. They wanted to know, was there a place for them, in my view, as someone who had sex change surgery, as a baptized follower of Jesus. We've been interacting, and it's as gentle interaction as you can imagine. This person is as sincere and open as you could imagine. And I said, obviously, Jesus receives us just as we are, but submitting to him in salvation and water baptism means confessing him as Lord. And if we confess him as Lord, then we have to do what he calls us to do. I said, what if he has made you and fashioned you to be a man? Are you willing to follow him in that way? So we're going back and forth on this, and I'm about to ask this individual a question. And I do this with tenderness. I do this with compassion. I'm about to ask this person a question. What about someone who has what is known as body identity integrity disorder, sometimes called body identity disorder for short, but body identity integrity disorder, BIID? The people feel acutely that they should be missing a limb. Their mind map tells them that from the elbow down, they shouldn't have a right arm, or from the knee down, they shouldn't have a left leg. And they are driven by this obsession to amputate. There's some that it's a sexual fixation, but many others, it's just this, it's not supposed to be there. It'd be as if, I guess, you had an arm growing out of your shoulder. It's not supposed to be there. They're troubled with it all their lives, and some have successfully succeeded. Yeah, that's how you do it. You successfully succeed. Sorry for the double wording there. Some have succeeded in getting a limb amputated surgically by a doctor in the UK who came under heavy criticism for doing this, some through staging an accident of some sort. They've had a limb amputated, and they are so thrilled. They feel so much better about themselves. I was just reminded about this by an article I spotted just during the break now. Determined to amputate, this is on Fox News Health, one man struggled with body identity integrity disorder. It's hard to imagine anyone wanting to lose a limb, but for people with BIID, it's a burning desire that haunts them every day of their lives. For John, it's a feeling that has consumed him for as long as he can remember. So he remembers wondering about things when he was 4 or 5. He remembers wishing he could get in the way of some buses. And if he stood under one of the buses and stuck his leg out, it would run over it, and he didn't have to get the leg cut off. This is between the ages of 7 and 11. And 11, he never went through with it. eventually went to college, got married, but even now, after 47 years of marriage, he cannot shake the burning feeling of wanting to be an amputee. So the question is, why do we say it's wrong? When I was on Tyra Banks' show, I was told by other participants that it was wrong for someone to amputate a limb to give them peace of mind if they had BIID. Why is that wrong? Even when the person feels they're living a lie with healthy limbs, and if they had the limb cut off, they would now feel better. Why is that wrong? But it's not wrong, as one man put it, rather than amputating a leg, to amputate what's between the legs. And with BIID, the person would now continue to live. It's a man. Now he's got, say, his left arm amputated. Now he's so happy to have his left arm amputated. And there are people that talk about, yeah, they're more at peace. They feel happy. They feel adjusted. They're so thrilled with the decision they make. They don't need to be on hormones for the rest of their lives. They just live out their natural identity. Whereas someone going through sex change surgery now has to actually, quote, change gender in terms of their legal identification and then be on hormones for the rest of their lives to stop them from being what they were born to be. Why is it that many who advocate for sex change surgery would say that this is wrong, that amputating a limb is wrong? And if you're one of those, enlighten me. Give me a call. If you're one that says sex change surgery is fine, if that's who that person is on the inside, they're a boy trapped in a girl's body or whatever, then sex change surgery is fine for them, then why wouldn't it be fine for someone to amputate a limb who has body identity integrity disorder? Can anyone help me understand that? Because to me, if the one is wrong, they're both wrong. And I don't say that to condemn individuals. I say that to say there must be a better way, that somehow there must be a way to help this person with body identity integrity disorder, to help them from the inside out. Somehow there must be a way to help them, or through the power of the gospel to help them from the inside out, just like someone with gender identity disorder, to help that person from the inside out. To me, it's a clear parallel. Other doctors, scientists who've examined this and looked at this see it as a clear parallel. I talk about it as a clear parallel in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Tell me where I'm missing something. Tell me where I am wrong here. Oh, did I mention this on the air? I forget which hour. I know I mentioned it, that National Health Services in UK has removed the word dad from a pregnancy handbook for fear of offending gay and lesbian parents. Yeah, they got a complaint, and they decided they're not going to use the term partner throughout the 200-page guide titled Ready, Steady, Baby. Is this outrageous or what? And as one leader said, Norman Wells of the Family Education Trust, no matter how much effort is made to present positive images of families headed by same-sex couples, the fact remains it takes a man and a woman to create a child. Friends, if you didn't hear this at the top of the hour, we have a unique opportunity to partner with the Coalition of African American Pastors. We're going to be putting in the hands of 60 key leaders a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, donating them at our expense. We'll pay the postage. Each book normally sells for $27.99 plus postage. So our joy to do it. Would you like to partner with us? Would you like to get a book or more into the hands of one of these leaders? For every $50, it'll sponsor two books being sent out. So if you'd like to do that, just call this number right now, 1-800-278-9978. Strengthening the resolve, giving further information to these key Black American pastors, Christian leaders standing for righteousness, appealing to our president to stand for righteousness. We'll send each of them a copy of A Queer Thing Happened to America. So if you'd like to help with that, your tax-deductible gift, just call 1-800-278-9978. You don't have to explain what it's for. Just say you'd like to make a donation. And every call that comes in today with a special donation, we will now put towards that righteous cause. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Let me encourage you to go to the website, 100,000 Signatures for Marriage. That's the number 100,000, the word signatures, the number 4, marriage, 100,000signaturesformarriage.com. Add your signature. Okay, we come back. I'm going to talk to you about the mindset of a revolutionary. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What does a revolutionary think like? What does a Jesus revolutionary think like? What do we mean when we talk about moral, cultural, spiritual revolution here on The Line of Fire? Well, you are listening to the right broadcast and to the right person because this is something very dear to me, something God has placed deeply in my heart, something I think about all the time. Lord, how can I be a voice of revolution for you? How can I be a voice of moral, cultural revolution? What does it mean to be a revolutionary? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7. 884 online, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. In my book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change, I have a chapter called Cult-like or Cutting Edge, What It Really Means to Be a Disciple. Cult-like or Cutting Edge, What It Really Means to Be a Disciple. Many times when we see people really devoted to Jesus, we think they're extreme, we think they're fanatical. But as I've often said, what the world calls fanaticism and much of the church calls extremism, God calls normal. It was Watchman Nee who said, by the time the average Christian got his temperature up to normal, everybody thinks he's got a fever. Or in the words of Leonard Ravenhill, the church has been so subnormal for so many years that when it finally becomes normal, everyone thinks it's abnormal. You say, oh, okay, I hear that, I understand it, but what's that got to do with being a revolutionary? Let me explain. A revolutionary thinks like this. Excuse me. Life as it is not worth living, but the cause is worth dying for. Life as it is not worth living, but the cause is worth dying for. Now, I'm just talking about a revolutionary. Give me liberty or give me death. It could be for a good cause. It could be for an evil cause. But that's how they think. So let's just go in the shoes of a secular revolutionary. What if you were a secular worldly revolutionary devoted to overthrowing the wealthy elite? What if this was your cause, your life? What if you had a job as a factory worker laboring 12 hours a day? What would motivate you? Would getting ahead on your job be your central focus? Would owning a lovely home in the suburbs be your primary goal? Certainly not. Instead, your central focus and primary goal would be fomenting the revolution. I'm talking about if you were a secular worldly revolutionary. You would seek to educate your coworkers, giving them revolutionary tracts and tapes, sharing revolutionary concepts with them, inciting within them the revolutionary spirit, inviting them to revolutionary meetings. We've got to change the system, you would say. We've got to increase our numbers and organize our efforts and sharpen our strategy. And when the time is right, we'll make our move. If you had extra money, you'd invest it in the revolution. If you decided to get married, you'd marry a fellow revolutionary. If you had children, you'd raise them to be revolutionaries. Like all true revolutionaries, you'd rather sacrifice and even die for the cause rather than accept the status quo. As expressed by Elaine Brown, speaking of her days as leader of the militant Black Panthers, it was invigorating, she said. It made life important. It made it bigger than you. Even the notion of dying for something bigger than you was far more powerful than living out a life of quiet desperation. She said, I was the happiest in my life when I was in the Black Panther Party. And friends, this was a violent party fighting violence with violence. We don't espouse that, but I'm talking about the mentality of a secular revolutionary. Well, then what should our attitude be as members of the Jesus People Party? Not the Black Panther Party, but the Jesus People Party. How then should we live? The kingdom of God has broken into this world, and the king himself has enlisted us in his cause, entrusting the keys of that kingdom to us and calling us to overthrow the powers of darkness and liberate captives in his name. What kind of lifestyle makes sense? Got an amazing quote from Bill Bright when we come back. And Joey, we'll play that call from a doctor in Boston when we return. We need a revolution, friends. God wants to use you and me to lead it forward.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm reading some excerpts from my book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change. And in the book, I talk about the mentality of a revolutionary. Now, we are not like worldly revolutionaries. We don't resort to violence, hatred, intimidation, anger. That's not who we are. When we think we can advance the cause of the gospel through violent confrontation, we are thereby denying the gospel. Yeah, it's one thing to be in the midst of a war and fighting as allied troops to bring down Nazi power or something like that. It's another thing to think that we're going to advance the cause of the gospel, the cause of Jesus, through violence or anger or hatred or intimidation. God forbid. Our whole mindset is completely contrary to that. But the mentality of radical commitment to a cause and following Jesus, whatever the cost or consequence, that should be normal discipleship for us. 866-34-TRUTH. Dr. Bill Bright observed that Nechayev, a Marxist of the last century, who died in prison for his role in the assassination of Tsar Alexander II, said, "The revolutionary man is a consecrated man. He has neither his own interest, nor concerns, nor feelings, no attachments, nor property, not even a name. All for him is absorbed in the single exclusive interest, in the one thought, in the one passion, revolution." Bright says this, "But this quality of dedication was not original with the Marxists or communists of today. It was Jesus who said, if anyone desires to be my disciple, let him deny himself, that is, disregard, lose sight of, and forget himself in his own interests, and take up his cross and follow me, that is, conform wholly to my example in living, and if need be, in dying also." Dr. Bright continues, "This means that the one who wishes to follow Jesus as his disciple must be willing to forfeit all claim to his life and make Christ and his kingdom paramount to all his consideration. That the Apostle Paul had done this along with multiplied thousands of other Christians is apparent, as he refers to himself in the first chapter of the book of Romans as a bond slave of Jesus." Tom Skinner says, "This does not necessarily mean that God expects you to go out, take the last shirt off your back, and live in abject poverty. It doesn't mean he plans for you to take everything you have, dump it, and live like a hermit. But it does mean that all that you are and all that you have is to be totally committed to Jesus Christ, that he owns you and everything you have, lock, stock, and barrel. He has the right to do with you and all that you own as he pleases. That's the whole name of the game." Do we need a moral and cultural revolution? Are we at a point where more of the same will only produce more of the same? Well, if you've listened to me for a month, if you listened to me for a year, if you listened to me for 4 years, if you read my books or listened to my messages in decades before that, you'd know, as a broken record, my answer is yes. Status quo is not what we need. More of the same will only produce more of the same, more of the same politics, more of the same church life. We need a revolution in our own hearts and our dedication and our lifestyle, Jesus radically changing us so that we will radically change society. Last week, I received a call during the first hour, which airs live in Boston, Massachusetts, along with many other fine cities in America, from a man who is a physician and a faculty member at Harvard. I want you to hear what he had to say about what's happening in his neck of the woods in Massachusetts. 866-34-TRUTH. Paul in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Paul. I'm a physician in Boston. I'm also a faculty member at the Harvard Medical School. I've been a member of two hospitals that merged, one with a strong Jewish background called Beth Israel, and the other with a Christian background, the New England Deaconess Hospital. So they combined to form the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital or Medical Center. They have a tradition of every year honoring, endorsing, embracing, promoting Gay Pride Week on campus. And this involves email announcements, it involves on-campus activities, speakers. Last year they produced a movie that was modeled after this Dan Savage movie about It Gets Better. And I've objected to it repeatedly as a policy because of obviously the immorality and the religious reasons, but also because of the medical reason. Homosexual behaviors carry a very high risk of a number of serious medical consequences. And I think I've made my arguments at the highest level of the leadership, and I've tried to be as honoring and as kind as I can with those arguments. They basically ignored me for the longest time and then decided to try to expel me from the medical staff 2 years ago, an effort that was not successful, but I was issued a letter of reprimand for my my views and expressing my views. I was shocked that we live in a kind of world now that expressing an opposing view to homosexual behaviors is somehow so abnormal or so offensive that it could result in nearly being expelled from a staff. So I guess my comment and also question is that I think there are, you know, other organizations that monitor these sort of things, Jewish organizations, Christian organizations that might be able to chime in and give me some support, so I'm not just the solitary lone ranger here in Boston with this ridiculous practice. I think it's insane, frankly, but nobody on the staff seems to want to buck up against the homosexual activists.
All right, so here's an amazing call back with you live now just after that clip from last week. A professor at Harvard Medical School, a practicing physician, and here when he says that he has a difference with actively promoting gay activism in his place of employment, okay, talking about campuses, you're talking about hospitals, when these things are being aggressively pushed and he respectfully raises his objection to that, he's threatened with the loss of his job. Again, the folks who are unsuccessful that wanted that to happen. Can you understand the outrage of this? He's simply saying, don't promote this. You should not be promoting it. And as a medical man, he's saying it's not a healthy lifestyle to promote. Here, let's just say they were promoting cigarette smoking. And they were promoting, this is nicotine week, nicotine pride week. We're coming out of the closet as smokers again. We want to reclaim the places of business. We want to be able to smoke on the planes again. We want to be able to smoke in restaurants again. We are reclaiming our rights as smokers. And he said, look, as a doctor, I take issue with this. And as a Christian, I take issue with this. And he's threatened with the loss of his job for that. That's where we stand today, friends. That's where things have come in our society. That's why we continue to sound the alarm. That's why my guest in the first hour today, an interview I'd strongly encourage you to listen to online, my guest, Reverend William Owens, who is a leader in the civil rights movement in the late 50s, early 60s, and as the founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors and the religious liaison for the National Organization for Marriage, that's why he's saying he has to raise his voice today. Friends, I am not primarily looking to the government to do this, although I want our elected officials to do what is right. I'm primarily looking to God's people, leaders behind the pulpit, Christian leaders in different aspects of society, Messianic Jewish leaders, wherever God has placed us. Everybody listening has a sphere of influence, whether that sphere of influence is your spouse, your kids, your neighbor, people you speak to through the media every day, whether it's people that you interact with in the workplace, whether it's friends, whether it's peers, we all have a sphere of influence. Are we thinking like Jesus revolutionaries and saying, okay, I'm here for a purpose? My primary purpose is not to get a good job, although a good job is great, meets your needs and helps you meet the needs of others. Better to work 40 or 50 hours than 70 or 80 hours for the same pay. Better to have more money so that your needs can be met and you can give generously to God's work and to the poor than to be one on the constant receiving end. But our primary goal here is not to get a good education. Our primary goal here is not to get a good job. Our primary goal here is not to have a big family. Our primary goal is to make an impact for the Lord. And with the families we have, to multiply disciples who will make an impact for the Lord. That's the beauty and the value of life. Being a disciple and making disciples. I'm going to give some reflections on how culture can be destroyed or repaired when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, if we're talking about moral, cultural, spiritual revolution, then let's be practical. Let's look at how cultures are destroyed. Let's think in a gospel way how cultures should be restored. And a simple question. If America was full of immorality, full of injustice, full of idolatry, full of sin of every kind, and the percentage of followers of Jesus in our country was 1%, one out of every 100 people. And then it grew from 1% to 30%. Would you expect there to be change? Would you expect there to be a drop in the immorality, a drop in the injustice, a drop in the idolatry? Would you expect that the light shining in the darkness would reduce the darkness? Would you expect that as drug dealers got saved, that drug dealing would diminish? That more sinners saved would mean less sinning? You have Mike Brown, prior to knowing Jesus, shooting heroin, using LSD, living in rebellion to my parents, even stealing from some homes and being a wicked, deceitful person. Now I get saved. I've given my life to following Jesus and making a difference and raising up and sending out disciples to preach the gospel around America and around the world. Would you think America would look different? Yeah, it's not some radical theology. Well, we're going to take over and make everyone submit to us and enforce Christianity on the nation. No, it's simply saying we should be an influence for good. And as followers of Jesus, we can impact whole nations. So there's an article written by Joe Carter, an editor at firstthings.com, Conservative Catholic Reflections. It's called How to Destroy a Culture in 5 Easy Steps. And he lays out some strategies and observations from others and summarizes them and discusses them here. And he says this, here are the steps. If you wanted to undermine cultural institutions, here's the step necessary to go from unthinkable to policy. Now, we're going to hear the decline. We need to think about how things could be turned back through the gospel. Step one, from unthinkable to radical. Carter says the first step is the easiest, provided the issue can become a fetish or the topic of an academic symposium. Since both the professoriate and the perverts have a fascination with the foul transgressive, that is, the truly transgressive, all you need to do is get the attention of one of these groups. So you get some radical group out there. What was once unthinkable now becomes considered radical. Then from radical to acceptable. Carter says this shift requires the creation and employment of euphemism. Want to kill a child exiting the womb? Call it dilation and extraction. And infanticide becomes a medical procedure. And he goes on with further examples. Step three, from acceptable to sensible. There's nothing more sensible than to submit to one's God. And while many Americans may profess to worship Allah, Jehovah, or Jesus, we mostly worship an American idol, ourselves. That is why social libertarianism has become our country's fastest growing cult. It has tapped into the self-idolatry by preaching a gospel of the individual. Number four, step four, from sensible to popular. This step merely requires personalizing the issue. Do you know someone who is LGBT, divorced, had an abortion? Sure you do. They're in your family, in your school, at your church. Do you hate them? Well, if not, then how can you disapprove of their actions? Step number five, from popular to policy. Commission a public opinion poll. Show the politician. They will do the rest. So let me just read these again. You want to undermine, destroy a culture. You want to undermine the values. First, you go from unthinkable to radical. Something so extreme, so crazy, that if we told you about it today, no, won't even think about that. Well, just get it introduced as radical. That's out there. That's radical. Then from radical to acceptable. Okay. Makes sense. That's not so bad. Then from acceptable to sensible. Yeah, I can see that. I don't just accept that. I can see that. Then from sensible to popular. You know what? I like that idea. Yeah, I support that idea. And then from popular to policy. So we need to look today and ask ourselves the question, how do we as God's people turn the tide? Oh, look, I'm not expecting a perfect America before Jesus returns. Can I go further? I have no written guarantee that America will be here when Jesus returns. Well, do you? Do you have that in the Bible? I don't. I expect it, but I don't. So my goal as a follower of Jesus is to live for him and to lead others to know him. The question is, as we come to know him, how do we live? How do you and I live as disciples? We are not primarily materialists. We are not primarily bowing down to the idols of this age. We are not primarily living for self or for monetary gain or popularity. We're living to please the Lord and make a difference. How, friends, do we go about doing that? I want to invite you to stay on this journey with me. I want to invite you to visit my website, askdrbrown.org. It's all one word, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and explore the hundreds or thousands of free materials, of hours of free materials, messages you can listen to, videos you can watch, articles you can read, all of our archives of years of radio broadcasts. They're waiting for you for free. Dive in. Join us on this journey. If you can become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter, this key growing army that undergirds what we do on a regular basis and helps us broadcast this message on the air, helps us speak to God knows how many people around America, around the world every day, helps us raise up laborers through our ministry school, through Fire School of Ministry, to send them out around America and around the world, helps me be a voice of outreach to my own Jewish community, and helps equip the church to reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, help spread moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. Join us on this journey. Pray for us. Get word out. Spread word about our broadcast so we can continue to grow and get on more and more stations around America. And stand with us. In fact, your gift will do double duty today. Not only will we use your gift to help us with this radio broadcast, but we are now sponsoring getting 60 copies of A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's a 700-page hardcover with postage over $30 per book. Getting them into the hands of key African-American leaders all over the nation who will be the signatories or the signatories of a letter that will go to Mr. Obama, hopefully with 100,000 signatures of Black Americans saying, reverse your views on marriage and re-embrace the biblical and natural and traditional view of marriage. Your gifts will be used directly to help sponsor those books and directly to help with radio outreach. You don't need to specify what it's for. Just call and say, want to stand with Dr. Brown. Here's my gift. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. You'll help us get these books into the hands of key African-American pastors here in America and help us be a voice for righteousness. 1-800-278-9978. Friends, as we come more and more into the election season, don't get caught up in politics. Get caught up in righteousness. Get caught up in living for God. Get caught up in making a difference while you yet have breath.